Hey, everybody. Welcome to Product Guys again. I got Tim. You got Rob. Hey, Rob, how you doing?
Doing great. How about you this morning?
Hey, I'm doing really, really good because we have a really special guest today, a really good friend of mine, hey, Kelly, how about a little introduction?
Yeah. Hi, everyone. Great to meet you all. My name is Kelly. I'm calling in from Manhattan, New York. Right now, I am a technical product manager at Capital One at this team called CPAL, which stands for Core Processing Abstraction Layer. It's basically my tool handles over 30 million transaction data every day. And I'm a full-on data nerd. I met Tim at a previous company. I was also a data PM. And before being a PM, I was a data scientist working in the mental health tech space in the Bay Area. I have also co-founded an online course product company where I work with clients from Stanford, Google, and I even built a course for U.S. special agents around 160 different countries. So I'm excited to be here, and I'm looking forward to talk about data product.
That's awesome. Kelly, you're being a little modest here because you recently received a pretty big deal international award. Do you want to tell the people about that?
Oh, thank you, Tim. I completely forgot about it.
Oh, I didn't. I did not forget.
So recently, I was included in part of this list. It's like women under 40 women, 40 under 40 women in tech in Taipei. Awesome. So Taipei Women in Tech, they chose about 40 women who are under the age of 40 who have accomplished certain degree of career, and mostly here to really inspire other women to not give up, continue being the leaders they are meant to be in tech.
I get goosebumps every time we talk about this because I think that is so awesome. No one more deserving. Kelly and I worked together for about a year. So bright, so quick. I remember when Kelly and I first had our one-on-one at the job, I thought, oh, here's another employee, you know? Great, let's chat. And then she talked and I was like, wow. In a week, this person learned what took me months to pick up. So just no one deserves it more. I was so excited for you, and I know that you're just going to inspire legions of new tech folks, product managers, and women, you know, women international from Taipei, from US. It's going to be so exciting to see. So yeah, earlier you said you were a technical product manager, and I think you might be our first technical product manager guest. So maybe for the crowd, maybe for the product guys listening out there, what's a technical product manager?
Yeah, that's a great question. To be honest, the definition really varies based on the company and the culture. Technical product managers, from my understanding of it, is that technical product managers usually have technical broad background and have domain expertise on specific technology that we're building. So for example, my technology is API endpoints. So on a day-to-day, instead of looking at design mockups looking at working with designers, my designers are often data architects, and my UI are data flow charts. And when it comes to writing spec, instead of writing specs on a user flow, a different pages on a UI, my spec is literally JSON files. Looking at how exactly other engineers will get to use my API, thinking about how other machines will receive information from us And sometimes it's easy to get into a nitty-gritty of thinking about like error codes, etc. So being a technical product manager is really fun for someone who enjoys technology and don't mind reading lines of JSON code, looking at data schema, and get a joy out of it while having the big context on how this like lines of text can be used in a friendly way by the machines or by engineers.
When it comes to customers, Kelly's customers are the future overlords, the machines, the codes, the AIs. So thank you, Kelly. But when you were describing that, I thought, hey, I first heard about technical product management from our buddy Max K, and he's going to be coming on later. I'll probably ask him the same question. But some of the distinctions he would also talk about was that for a technical product manager, maybe your customers and those people you serve might be other product managers, like yours truly, Tim Hu, right? I always say that my favorite part of product management is building the button. While I do enjoy reading a couple of JSON blobs once in a while, it's not my passion. And so I like to really lean on the Kellys of the world to make sure that on the tech side, things are still working smoothly. So thank you, Kelly. Without you, no me. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Tim. It's very kind of you.
Oh, of course.
It's great. I enjoy it, and think it's especially easy for people to feel intimidated by it, feel like they need to have to be an engineer or have some sort of technical background to do it. And my opinion is that anyone can do it as long as they're willing to learn.
Well, for sure. Although I do think you're being a little bit modest, with the data science background. I think certainly it doesn't hurt, right? Yeah. Did your data science background ever kind of contribute or help you pick up the role, learning JSON and helping understand the machines?
It actually does. So back in the days as a data scientist, I often had to think about say two ways when it comes to utilizing empathy as a data scientist. First is think about how my business stakeholders would use this information I give to them, and it varies based on their different levels of data literacy a business stakeholder will have. So that's definitely a product kind of way of thinking, like how data is being used by others, what actions we wanted people to take when they receive a certain kinds of information, how I want to package the information. So that's one part. And the second part is definitely on like building something that machines can understand or other technology can understand. Data can come in multiple different formats, like CSV, can be used in different ways, how I want to design the rows and columns that will like be transformed, permuted into a different forms used for by different software and libraries. So these two are definitely like a very, I would say, a very human way of looking at data. And that definitely helps me today.
It's funny that you say a very human way of looking at data, because I often forget to mention this, but at the end of the day, when you have a fresh batch of data, you just start gathering information, or maybe you're building a new database with new schemas and new data tables. The first person to use it is going to be that data analyst, maybe that data scientist, that engineer. And that's where I come in, where back in the day, yours truly, I was a data analyst, right? And I was an actuary, and I spent a lot of time looking at schemas and querying and answering human questions with these data tables. Yep. And I am so picky. I am so picky with the way that your schema looks and the way that you've organized and segregated your data tables and the way that you've codified and like what's your primary key. If I don't like it, oh, you're gonna hear about it from me. You're gonna hear about it from me. I'm gonna need you to fix your data table. I don't care if you gotta rebuild it. Okay, I care a little bit. But yeah, I mean, even if it's data, even if it's technical product management, even if you're building for the machines, it starts off still a human experience and a human product, human deliverable, right? So definitely cannot forget that point. But yeah, so last time you and I worked together, you were a
Yep.
data product manager. So part of your journey,
Yeah.
data scientist, data product manager, and technical PM.
Yeah.
What would you tell the kids is the difference between a data PM and like a technical PM? What would you say is the difference on a daily basis?
I would say a data PM is a type of technical PM. Like I actually gave a talk about like what is data product at Women in Tech last year around like Christmas. Think about how I want to frame this. So there are about like five different types of data products. And the reason I mentioned like data PM is a type of technical PM
Right.
is because technical PM would build for a machine, would build for those who are more like for like technical users. So it can be a subset of a technical PM. But we can also argue that some data products that a PM is building is more of a, maybe like a non-technical PM or business PM. For example, maybe like a PM that specialized on building dashboards or data visualization that is used by people who are not as technical. Then that's a different way of translation, and it's will likely focus more on like the UI, making like, information more user friendly. You can argue that data PM can be both a technical PM or a business PM. So it really depends on like the type of products they're building.
I had a little bit of experience before I went into my current company, which is Bestow. It's a life insurance company. Check it out, bestow.com. But before I got that offer, I was in discussions with a different company, and they were essentially a data provider in the construction space. They were a data provider, a data vendor. They also had a couple of user-facing B2B type of product. Well, it's more like B2B to C. They had a couple of products like that, but it was interesting. Their value proposition and the product, the data product they offered was different. It was a pure data product where they organized and digested raw data from public records, what have you, and then basically set up an API for other folks to integrate to and charge per call. And they were basically saying, hey, we want to replace credit scoring for companies. I thought that's interesting. That's so interesting. It's interesting what they were doing, but I've done that type of work and I thought, man, this is going to be very, this is going to be very machine focused, right? It's going to be a lot of error handling and version control and the things that, while I've seen, I don't know that I necessarily have a desire to improve. But Kelly, you and I in our conversations, you've talked about how you've got a passion for this type of stuff. Like, what kind of stuff is it? When you're building APIs, when you're building the next credit rating program for a construction company, what are some of the things that we need to worry about? What are some of the things we need to think about?
I think like an API product is unique in its own way, and also a heads up that I'm still pretty early at Capital One,
Yeah, for
so
sure.
my knowledge can be limited. For based on what I know now, is that for example, like rapid prototyping, like build, fail, and learn, and like iterate really fast, it doesn't really apply to API. Because once we like ship out an API, engineers or machines start using it, we cannot just shut it down and just scrap it up and build something new
That's
because
right.
our users are still using it. Therefore, that's why version control is important.
That's right.
For example, that for as data scientists, I used to use Python a lot, and the process of like migrating from Python 2 to Python 3, it takes a long time for people to get used to the syntax, or for a tech team wanting to like upgrade their tech stack, it takes a long time. So be able to service both like older version versus a newer version, it's something that a product manager needs to be very thoughtful about. Especially like when if it's API product that provides data. to different tech
Vendor, yeah.
teams. Yeah, then it's something that I start to learn about, something called like backward
Oh,
compatibility.
yeah.
Yeah, and if we want to maybe like our this tech team is using an old access pattern, what would that what we want them to like use like a new access pattern, then how do you make sure they are still getting the same information during their migration? So those are all the things that I need to be very thoughtful about. So it still comes from like similar kind of thoughtfulness a product manager would have, and it's mostly just like different domain of thoughtfulness. So maybe like a business PM, the thoughtfulness comes from how would user buying migrate from buy maybe like a Slack user migrate from this UI interface to another way UI interface where they get to talk to their coworkers differently. So that's a different way of thoughtfulness.
I think it's similar and different for sure. I think there's a little bit of a heavier lift when you're talking about APIs and data. For example, today with our organization, we use for our products and our determination dozens of different data vendors, right? Each one of those integrations, each one requires some sort of data mapping back to the way that we do business, back into our products. And if you consider just for example, maybe you're out there and you're using, I don't know, like you're signing up for a mortgage. I mean, maybe you're on Rocket Mortgage, right? They could give you a decision pretty quickly. And in order to do that, they're connecting with folks that have public records, th those data vendors. And so when I think about data product and I think about what data products, data vendors exist out there, all these companies are dependent, and some of them honestly are hard coded in the way that they, that's not ideal by the way, but some new products out there, you look on their website and you're like, oh, it's so slick, the website looks so good, but behind the scenes they've hard coded all these.
Even worse, some companies even just hire people from like Indonesia and Philippines and pay them very like very minimum amount of salary and have like humans to do the hard work behind a simple looking UI.
It's the ghost, it's the not ghost in the shell, it's the Wizard of Oz trick, right? It looks amazing, and then behind the scenes it's like, oh, it's a bunch of bunny people spinning their wheels trying to make this work like old school style. It's a good product technique. I'm not gonna knock it. Some it works, but ideally you want to get to the point where you're not doing the Wizard of Oz, where on the front end it looks great, but behind the scenes you're still doing it the old school way, right? But yeah, back to the data vendors and like the data products where people are hard coding. If you ever wanted, if you as the product manager, data product manager, technical product manager, you want to change the way that your API looks, feels, maybe you want to sunset that API, there's a lot more of a heavy lift that goes into it. There's a lot more consideration because, hey, Kelly could be putting an API out there. Maybe there's 100 partners. You've done so well. You've brought on 100 different customers. They're all integrated to your product. Well, now you have to think about, do I sunset that endpoint? Do I make a new one? Or do you somehow make new fields and you have to think about backwards compatibility? And like, for that company that hard coded to that one area, that one data element, well, you can never make that a data element go away now. So that was some of the things that I've seen. And it's you got to think about the machine is a little, considering for the machine is a little harder. I think sometimes making considerations for the human a little more predictable, a little more consistent, would you say?
Yeah, for sure. It's like I would say like consistency is the most important part for API product. And on top of consistency on the human level, definitely like change management, very clear on education, documentation, communication. Those are very crucial for like, the humans to adapt to new tools.
Documentation and communication, we've got a funny story there. So like I said, I've been working in a place and we utilize dozens, Dozens, and Rob's probably got a couple of good stories here too, but dozens of these data vendors. And anytime you want to start using a new data vendor, well, how do you figure out how to integrate to those new partners? Well, you read their documentation. And some of the data providers out there, the older you are, probably the better data set you have, right? But then the older you are, you operate as a company on the older ways. So we'll talk about companies like LexisNexis. How long have they been around? I don't know, like a long time. Longer than Facebook, I think. Longer than Facebook, right? And they've got a really rich data set. Really rich data set. But you look at their documentation, sometimes maybe even laughable, right? Because it's so incomplete, right? It's so out of date. It's written in a way that's so difficult to consume, right? But you know what? Like, you kind of work through that. You got to work through it because you want the output. You want the end product, which is, all right, fine, we'll pull their data so that we can use it for our decision making and maybe for our data science. Well, it's, well, hopefully you're not depending on a vendor for a data science model, right? That's probably rough. And we could
Yeah,
talk about that. Go ahead.
Tim, do you remember back in the days when we are working in the insurance tech space together and we have to like work with our partners, and sometimes they come like give us data in different ways. Sometimes it comes with like Excel, sometimes it's like an Excel file, but it actually should be like a PDF, but they just transform a PDF into
Oh, why do you
Excel.
do this to us?
Yeah.
If you if you want to be a P, if you're listening to this and you want to be a product manager, just consider that for a second. You might have to still work an Excel file that was translated from a PDF. And that's not fun. It's ridiculous.
It's
And people will
not
laugh at you. Kelly and I will laugh at you if you do this.
Well, at the same time, that's what makes data product manager very valuable, also very hot right now. Like maybe like 10 years ago, like companies were suffering from lack of data, lack of information, but now we just have way too much data, way too much information, and don't know what to do about it.
And you know what? I think the reality of the data world is it's still very new. Yes, there's a ton of data out there, but if you think about like the percentage, like, I don't know, Kelly, I'm gonna mess this up. Help me here. Precision and recall, right? Something about, hey, if I'm pulling data to make a decision, or if I'm using an iPhone to just do a job, maybe I want to send an email out, right? Like, this is just a job that has to be completed, and it has to work to a high degree. And so, if I'm trying to send an email on my iPhone, it needs to work like 90% of the time. Well, actually, it needs to work 98, 99% of the time, because if it fails, I won't trust my phone and I won't use it. That doesn't exist today for data product management and data utilization, right? Like, I'll go and call a data vendor and their accuracy could be down to like a 60, 70%. Very common in the data vendor world where you try to look up some data on your customer, you make a call, it comes back, it's only right 70% of the time. And that's perfectly acceptable. That's like the state of the industry. And so I it it's th there's a little bit of accommodation for the newness still, right? I don't know if you've all seen any of that. So Rob, man, have you seen it? You still with us? Anything you've seen around that? You integrate with some data vendors?
Yeah, absolutely. And certainly didn't want to interrupt the great story there. I've seen a lot of it. And part of it is the culture, right? Especially as we start to differentiate as product managers, I think I personally see that sort of people moving in the more UI design space, as Kelly mentioned, and people who are still kind of in that jack of all trades space, and people who are focusing more on the technical or data side, we're all working together in order to figure out like what is the right bit of data, who do we go to, what product features does this enable, what are the jobs to be done. If we don't mind, I'd love to ask Kelly, like from a data or a technical perspective, how do you sort of influence those people who are looking at product strategy so that as they're going through their envisioning space and they're really trying to go back to some of that zero-based design, they're thinking about things in a way that sort of facilitates your ability to create a sustainable data ecosystem?
Yeah, that's a very good question. From my experience, data has almost become like the blood or the air of a company, especially for financial systems. Data is so valuable that everyone has an opinion on how data should look like, what the ecosystem should look like, everywhere from like leadership, architect, engineers to product managers, all things have different ideas on what a data ecosystem will look like. So it can be tough as a product manager to make an influence in that way. At the same time, I think a great gift. My strength as a product manager is to ask questions and help people think differently. In a room where everyone has their own opinions, I think that a product manager, as a data product manager, can be valuable by asking thought-provoking questions, or sometimes even just inviting stakeholders to talk to the end users themselves and really understand how data is being used. I think data is so abstract that it's easy for a stakeholder, it's easy for the team to stuck in the mental space. And one of my favorite thing to do is to just talk to like the people who actually have to use the data on their side. So for example, I was working on replacing a tool that will help a call center agents to get the information they want quickly in a more friendly way. And for a long time, people were just communicating through slides, and I set up a one-on-one session, just inviting my partner from another team. With both product managers to really talk to this one call center agent to see how the data we were responsible of and how this data is being used on the UI. And even the UI, we did not design the UI, but we're responsible for like, the numbers, the digits on the UI, but that makes an influence. And I remember it had just happened like very recently. That my partner was literally shocked when he saw something very unexpected from this call center agent. And then we stir up like new conversations. Definitely this confusion, people with this like inconsistency in terms of information, but I think it's all healthy to bring a room of very data-minded people back to the ground to look at data from our user's perspective, and in this case will be like call center agents, but another case might be engineers.
Yeah, that's it. Talking to the customer, talking to the end user, talking to kind of the business person, understanding how they as people interact with these is always going to be a common theme here on the Product Guys
It is.
podcast. It's just so useful because the information they give you is gold. It is gold. It's you would have you can't make this stuff up. The way that people do things, interact with tools. There's no way you would have predicted how they did it without ever having talked to these folks. So it's, yeah, always an advocate for talking, shortening that feedback loop. That's what it is, right? Like the user getting the builder and the user as close together as possible, right? So, yeah.
Especially as a technical product manager, it's very easy to get stuck in the execution mode. Want to make sure data is consistent, data is stable, we have data that's available. We have to count like take an account of like downtimes. It's so easy to think about like to just get distracted by like the technical details and all the different scenarios when things may have gone wrong, which are like, absolutely important. At the same time, it's good to just be reminded on that in the end, like it will be used by human, even though we are an API product, it will be used by human as well. Maybe not directly, but it will still influence a human experience.
Oh, for sure. Rob,
And if I
any
can just jump in for one sec,
yeah.
see, you're turning over to me anyway.
I'm ready. I'm ready
Oh,
for you.
so I just, for those of us who aren't in data, I just wanted to kind of restate what I heard there. And Kelly, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm, just hearing that level of influence kind of required, right? Like the data side, the technical side has their own roadmap. And theoretically, the more that we can sort of shift their responsibilities to the left, because as we talked about at the beginning, they've got some different time frames and responsibilities in terms of rapid prototyping, getting things wrong, failing fast. They've got some different responsibilities in terms of documentation. Perhaps your APIs have been exposed. There's some sort of API store. So, if you're not in that space, then what you can do perhaps is bring that person along with you, take them out to lunch, introduce them to your team, make sure that the rest of the organization understands not just what they're doing, but how they're doing it. Do you have any tools to determine lineage? Are you recreating the wheel unnecessarily? Are you just tossing new fields out there? Really understanding what's going on and creating a common language around the product is invaluable. It can only help everybody focus on the client or the customer.
Oh, absolutely.
Yep, exactly. I think that w it's a one important part of a product manager. It doesn't matter if this person is a technical or business product manager, is to just almost like, I don't know if there's a better analogy about it, but almost like being able to do like space jump or space travel, like go into like the earth and know the nitty-gritty and then I jump back into the space and like look at everything in the whole picture. I think a product manager who can just do this in a very like speedy way, an efficient way, and this person will be very successful.
That's a personal philosophy that I try to deploy, but it's exactly that. It's right, existing in the multiverse. It's the universe that is technical and schemas and API endpoints and SOAP and REST API, right? It's going there and then switching to someone that doesn't understand tech at all. And then explaining all of it in a very simple way. Because I feel like that whole idea, that being that bridge and that translation, I think is what's really missing today. I've worked with some very, very capable developers that they don't need me. They only need me because I save them time, but they don't need me because I think there are some developers out there, some engineers, some principal engineer folks that are so good. They can talk directly to your business stakeholder, maybe that customer, the paying customer, and build them exactly what they need. But here's the problem. This is why I still have a job, especially in a big organization, is if you think about it, there are, 24 hours in a day. Maybe you want to work 8 of them, maybe you want to work 10. If you're coding, you're not talking. And if you can code and talk, you're like a monster. I don't understand you, but you know what I mean. So if someone needs to go, gather this information and do that translating, and someone needs to sit there and do the coding. So I think as a product manager, very important to be able to make that translation. I had a, as you were all talking, I had this example of where that translation becomes very important, right? We were thinking about insurance. So I work in the insurance space, and we were talking about insurance companies, insurance carriers. That's a critical part of selling insurance. You got to know who you're selling insurance for. But at the same time, there is in the real world this idea of insurance companies owning subsidiaries and selling those pieces around that exists in the real world. Well, how do you account for that in data, right? Because if we have this big Progressive insurance company and they've got a little subsidiary, Timco, that sells bicycle insurance, right? If Progressive sells Timco out one day, how do you and your data manage that? And make sure that Timco will not break and crash and suddenly charge the commission to the wrong person. How do you do that? Someone's got to be thinking about that, right?
That's probably like a technical product manager's job, like or even a platform product manager's job. Think about how to make the platform resilient, scalable enough so that every when a company grows and launch new product, we don't need to custom solution for each product, but the solution should be resilient and flexible enough that any product can be launched and shipped quickly. And that would be a good secret for any company that wants to grow and scale really fast.
Yeah, and maybe you don't have to, maybe you don't have to necessarily build that exact capability, but thinking about it and knowing when you've hard coded a piece in a way that will prevent you from scaling later, or knowing who that other PM is with your integration partner, and you know that they hard coded your thing and say, "Hey guys, we're gonna change this. You need to fix this soon. Otherwise, you'll be in a lot of trouble with your customers." You know, that's something I think as a product manager we have to think about constantly, right? We're not thinking about which library to use, but we do need to consider kind of those real world implications, you know?
I always think about real world implication. Always think about how things work and how things will be used.
For sure, for sure.
Hey, Tim, I got a question back to
Yeah, of
you.
course.
So earlier, would you talk about like being a great translator as a product manager?
Yeah.
I'm curious, like if you can talk to like a 5-year-old about your product, how would you describe it?
Explain like I'm five, what I do and what my product is. Yeah.
If you can explain to like your future kid on
Yeah.
what your product is
Yeah.
and how would you describe it?
Well, I think there are a couple layers to it. I think the first layer is that I'll start with, hey, so this is what your papa does. This is what papa does. My company is in charge of keeping the promise. So we sell life insurance, right? So Tim's company, Bestow, we're in charge of keeping the promise. If anything were to ever happen to your papa, your mama, anybody, right? I'm explaining it to my kid. Well, Bestow will come in and keep the promise that makes sure you are okay, that you still always get your favorite toys and you always get your favorite food and that someone will always be taking care of you. That's what I sell. That's what we do. So if I got an inquisitive 5-year-old and they want to go a little deeper, then I'll go, well, there's a lot of work that goes into keeping a promise, right? One of it is, you know, you have to decide who you want to make a promise with. Not everyone, you know, there's a lot of people in the world, a lot of promises to be made, but we don't want to, we don't have the ability, we don't have the time, you know, to necessarily keep that promise, make that promise with everybody. So what I do specifically, I'm an underwriting decision. So what I do specifically is help the company decide who do we want to make a promise with? And so that's what I do. That's
That's
it.
really good. I love it.
I could have been a
You could
marketer.
have.
Maybe. Maybe it's more
So
fun to be a product person.
your tool helps your company decide who you want to make a promise with.
That's right. That's right. And that's underwriting, right? There are all the people in the world. Everyone wants to, well, not everyone wants to, but everyone potentially could want life insurance, right? At some point, the end will come, whether you like it or not. At some point, the end will come. With insurance, it's great, right? There's a price. There's someone to price any sort of insurance policy. Any sort of insurance policy, you pay a big enough dollar amount and they will insure you. Well, for us, we start with a select few folks. We think about kind of attributes about this person and we think, hey, are you someone that makes sense for us to make a promise with? And that's it.
Interesting. Would you
Yeah.
say that your API is focusing on like the decision making side?
Yeah, so, you know, when it comes to decision making, the way that it actually happens is that today there are human beings highly trained to make these decisions. They've learned all these things through a multi-decade career. And what I do today is I codify it. I take all those decision-making rules that exist in someone's head and I turn it into something a machine can ingest. I take all the things that help with the decision, like, hey, how healthy is a person? Maybe at the doctor's visit, and I turn it into some other way to make that same decision. It's just a matter of you take information, you find it, you put it all together, you make a decision. And we make it such that a machine can do it, make it so that code can do it. So that's it. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, so in my framework, there are five types of data products. Starting from like the lowest level, this raw data, and then a layer up derived data, and then there's algorithms, decision support, such as dashboards and then automated decision making. So based on what I'm hearing, your product automates decision making. Almost like a self-driving car in some way, similar level.
I think that's right. The solution is not currently making the decision asynchronously without human oversight. I think at this point it's all kind of codifying what the human is already doing. So it's you can't do that with insurance, not yet. Although I will say I can make the argument that to a certain extent actuaries, those folks figuring out how much to charge, they've more or less done some of that. But you know, we're not talking about a prescriptive model just yet.
Right. That's really cool.
It's fun. My company's cool. They got a shirt that says, "Hey, we sell insurance. It's cooler than it sounds." And I think it is. Yeah.
I love it. Amazing. My product is on the other side of the spectrum where we handle raw data.
Right.
Yeah. So it's a little bit different. So you would your team would potentially be my customer, where I will be providing the raw data for you to make build models for your decision making.
I think no doubt at all. I actually think that's very possible. So we have a lot of partners just like you and your folks at Capital One. We've got a lot of partners like that. So hey, turns out this is also a sales call.
Wanna work with us, Tim?
Yes, the answer is yes.
We can solve your problems.
All right, the answer is yes. Hold on, Kelly. Let me take it back to my stakeholders and we'll circle back around. this was awesome. Love talking to Kelly every time I get. Kelly, first of all, man, I would be remiss because Rob's the man. Rob, any closing remarks, any closing questions for Kelly?
A restatement and then a thought, I suppose. So, you know, as I heard the two of you, right, when you were explaining like you were five, I'll try to explain like maybe someone's 3.5.
Nice.
Your product is all about people feeling like they're okay. And I think that's the entire financial industry, right? You want to know if you make a purchase, you're okay. In the future, you're going to be okay, that sort of thing. And creating that confidence requires a lot of data, a lot of information. And what I heard Kelly say as well is that, you know, because of those five levels of data and production and ingestion and then, you know, decision making, that there's just a lot that goes into it. And understanding what the currency really is for product management is always really important. In this case, you're kind of selling safety and security, accuracy. So, you know, I was just thinking like, you know, both of you did a great job of sort of representing why you're the right people to listen to in some of this product thought. So
thanks, Rob.
Yeah,
no worry. So I was just going to say, Kelly, from your perspective, is there something that a good product partner would do to really make sure that they understand how it is that you can work together before they talk to you? And I know I've kind of put that out there before, but maybe an opportunity to button it up.
Yeah, I really appreciate how you ask very thoughtful questions, Rob. So the question is, what's something that people should know before talking to me as a technical product manager building APIs?
Mm-hmm.
It depends on where they are and who they are. So I think if it's someone in a leadership position, bringing in a high level, like company-wide perspective will be very useful versus prescribing exactly what the architecture ecosystem will look like. On more of a technical stakeholder, their value is like they're valuable in terms of understanding like very nitty-gritty on the implementation, such as do we have enough storage size if we want to offer live stream data 24/7 in a very short latency. So they're experts on being able to make decisions and think of technical solutions and then very fine details. And what they can support me is continue asking why. And a good prompt is someone who should be able to explain the why to the technical partners so that technical partners can come up with the right solution to really address the whys. And if it's a leadership, a partner in the leadership level who can give a very high level company-wide strategy, 12 months plan to the product manager, that will provide a product manager a better context on the why we're doing what we're doing and how why we're doing what we're doing can help the company get to where the company wants to go. So this cross-pollinated collaboration communication is super important when working with a API product manager.
Yeah. Love that answer. Thank you.
Rob, I'm learning something at my new place and I want to like loop in there as well. So, you know, that communication channel and the kind of aligning folks and interacting with a product manager at various levels, technical, leadership, strategic. Believe it or not, I think the company, like your CEO or the vice president, needs to be willing to invest to make that happen, I think. Because what I see a lot is you have all these individuals, they go out and do things. And if you get it into a big enough organization, they do the same things at the same time. And that's a problem. I don't think, like, if you're investing in a company and you're like, oh, you have 10 people and five of those people split out and they're doing the same thing as the other five people, the same exact thing, the same deliverable. Why is that happening? Well, you know, what I'm seeing is that you almost need someone organizing the organization, right? To know, go, hey, we need to stop for a day. Once a quarter, get those people in a room for 8 hours and talk it out. Make sure, right. Yeah. And it's like, you know, these quarterly plannings, if they involve people that don't actually know what's being built, you know, that's a problem, right? If you've got product managers and they're supposed to help figure out the solution and you don't bring them together and you instead just say, oh, I need you to build this button or I need you to make this API. You know, I've definitely seen that the two different product managers will go end up building the same exact thing because they were not in that quarterly planning room. And then they end up being not as efficient as they could have been, you know? So that's one little thing I wanted to throw out there is, you know, as the person organizing the org, invest a little bit of time, do a quarterly planning, bring those product folks together and if the cross-functional folks and let them hash it out for a day. It's going to suck the first time. Yeah, go ahead.
It's very easy to live in a silo.
Yeah.
Especially when the company is big. There's an analogy of what you just described, Tim. It's called slime mold experiment.
What is a slime mold experiment?
Is that if you like put slime mold in a maze, assuming that the company wants to solve a problem XYZ, and then the company just tell like a bunch of product managers, okay, solve XYZ. And then the product managers and the product teams are like slime mold, just going to all directions. And then at least one of the teams can get to the exit and find the end of that maze. And that's like what matters. And the rest just hit a dead end.
That might be okay. You know, that doesn't sound okay to me, but like, you know, I've never been CEO. Maybe that's okay. But it's not.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kelly. That was crazy awesome. Yeah. All right. Kelly, cool. Rob, you are always awesome. Always great to catch up with you on a Sunday morning. But you know what? Kelly, any last closing remarks and tell the people how to find you? How do they find Kelly?
Yeah, everyone is more than welcome to connect with me on LinkedIn. If you search LinkedIn, Kelly Chow, Kelly Chou. I think I might be the first Kelly Chow LinkedIn since I joined LinkedIn back in 2010. So very lucky to have got that unique Kelly Chow LinkedIn URL. So if you put in URL linkedin.com/in/Kelly Chow, Chou, and you'll be able to find me. And let me know you, you know, at me, and I heard about it through the podcast, and I'm more than happy to answer any questions or stay connected that way.
Awesome. Awesome. And thank you, Kelly. It's a pleasure. I am Tim Hu. We got Rob D. You can find me, Tim Hu, on Twitter, Tim Hu Product Guy. And then I'm also on LinkedIn. Just my SEO game is strong if you use the secret keyword, Tim Hu ATX. Hu is spelled H-U. So, all right. I'll catch you all next time. Bye.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye, everyone. Bye.